News Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. Time now, 4:36 p.m. Some of you guys are already grabbing the car keys, moving towards the door. I know it to be true. I'm saying you are about to hit the road and go to the house, and I do not blame you. Hey, listen, if you're heading out and you're wondering, what am I going to stop and get something to eat tonight? I got to find a place. Let me just recommend to you Just Love Coffee Cafe. All right, Just Love Coffee Cafe. Now, yes, they have coffee, absolutely, and you can do this on the way into the morning too, by the way. You can stop in the morning, get you that latte, that cappuccino, incredibly good gourmet blend. They've got the great brews. But all said and done, you can also have breakfast, lunch, and dinner there. Yeah. I mean, they've got wraps and salads and sandwiches that'll blow your mind. A lot of them, they cook them in this waffle iron style, so it just has this really cool waffle texture. Sourdough bread, yeah. All I'm saying is you might want to check out Just Love Coffee Cafe for the coffee and the food. Two locations, South Memorial Parkway in Huntsville, Hughes Road in Madison. Just Love Coffee Cafe. Check them out. So there's a number of groups, and I love that conversation we just had a moment ago with Allison Sinclair from Local Alabama. I like the name Local Alabama because they're right, keeping it local. It's right here at home. I mean, in her group, one of the first things they did was they went to a school board meeting. Not school board, but a library board meeting. A library board. Who thinks of the library board? Well, they did. They didn't like something that was happening. They went down there and met with them. And it wasn't scary. They did it. And, you know, it's those kind of things that it's kind of like what I said earlier when I was talking about crime, that broken windows theory. That literally the broken windows theory is if you let the little things keep going by, like people throwing rocks through windows, then it leads to the bigger things. So what did they do? They kind of have the broken windows theory, I guess, in local grassroots politics. They went to the library board of all places and met with some folks, just good folks who were on the library board, and got them to change their policy and set aside a vote they were about to make on a vaccine mandate for the 7 employees of the local library in Shelby County. Love that. There was another group. She said some things, though, that reminded me. There was another group when I first ran for office in 2010. Some of y'all, you know, of course, have heard of Rick and Bubba, and Rick Burgess's wife, Sherry, is just a wonderful, godly person who has got a great ministry. But she also decided, similar to what Allison Sinclair said, she decided that she was tired of seeing things in state politics, and she decided she didn't want to, you know, continue to see it from the sidelines. And so Sherry Burgess and a group of women got together and formed a group in 2010 called Allied Women. And Allied Women went out and supported candidates they believed were going to support godly conservative principles. I'm proud to say I was one of 10 people they supported statewide. And I found her blog from August of 2010, believe it or not. And she talks and says a lot of the same things that Allison Sinclair just said. She says things like, you know, that they realized that sometimes what you do at the local level may mean more than what you do if you're fighting for something in D.C. Because the people that are running for the local library board are the ones who then run for the city council, who then run for the state legislature, who then run for Congress. And if you're starting off at the local level, you might be amazed at what you can do to begin helping people, good people, godly conservative people, get into position to do more later. And so Allied Women, they even formed a PAC. They formed a PAC and they donated to campaigns. And they got busy, man. And I was proud to be on the receiving end of one of their 10 endorsements in statewide races. Allied Women. I'd love to know. I need to find out from Sherry Burgess what they're doing now, if anything. And then we also have a group that's out there just making waves right now nationally. But they started off local. It's called Parents Defending Education. It's now a national grassroots organization that's working to reclaim schools from activists that are imposing harmful agendas. And they do network and coalition building, just like what Alice has said they're doing at Local Alabama. So, folks, I'm telling you, this is how it works. It's called grassroots. And grassroots is taking root. The only thing necessary for evil to triumph is for good men to do nothing. Keep that in mind. That's why I keep saying, Right Side Ruffians, look around your community and get that attitude of, you know what, not on my watch. And like Charlene always says, there's more of us than there are of them. All right, hey, listen, I got some callers that have held on the line patiently while I rambled there for a minute. Let me go get them. Line four, I got Rich from Huntsville. This ought to be good. Hey, Rich, Phil Williams on the right side. How are you today, man?
Hey, what's up, Phil? I'm doing well, man. I just wanted to touch on the Ahmaud Arbery trial. I don't know if you had a chance to listen today, but one of the defense attorneys for one of the McMichaels have, I don't know what is she trying to reduce Ahmaud Arbery down to. She made comments referencing his long, dirty toenails. Now, I mean, you know, it's bad enough that Mr. Arbery's mom is in the, you know, is in the courtroom having to listen to that. But at the same time, I'm also thinking, what does that have to do with his trial? And I'll tell you what it has to do with it. She's attempting to dehumanize.
Hey, Rich. I'll jump in with you and tell you, I have no idea what that would have anything to do with the trial. I'm an attorney, and I cannot imagine why a defense counsel would step up and start talking about the victim's toenails. That makes no sense to me whatsoever either.
That's why theory is important, because critical race theory puts a nice package around why that defense attorney would say something like that. She said that because 11 of those jurors are white, even though 50% of Glenn County, Georgia is black. 11 of the 12 jurors are white.
Well, I mean, so first of all, let me just say this. The prosecution and the defense are both involved with selecting a jury. It's not like the jury just gets handed to the defendants, all right? It's not. So they go through jury selection process, and then if the prosecution does not like it, they're allowed to do what's called a Batson challenge. A Batson challenge means they challenge it based upon race or other demographics that they believe were heavily influenced in the selection. So I don't know how in the world that would be if the demographics are what you say they are, but I can just tell you right now, the prosecution and the defense both go through the jury selection process. They get to select people, brother. I'm just telling you. The jury is not handed to them by some white supremacist hiding in the background. Hold on, Rich. The jury is not handed to them by some white supremacist smoking cigars in the smoky back room, creating a jury that he thinks is going to wind up, you know, prevailing because critical race theory is what we all live in, systemic racism. I mean, don't go conspiracy theorist on this. At least pick a piece of it that has some objectivity to it. Now, why she would talk about his toenails, I have no idea. But I do know this. The jury is not just something that appears out of thin air. The jury is selected by both the prosecution and the defense. Rich, I got another caller on the line, man. I got to go jump on and get it. Keep trying, man. Maybe one day you'll get me, but not tonight. All right. Listen, let me jump over to line five, Copper. I got Brian from Huntsville. Hey, Brian. Phil Williams on right side. How are you today?
Mighty fine. Salutations to you.
And to you, sir. Something
you were saying earlier about the driver at Waukesha, some people are saying it was not indicated that it was terrorism. Well, based on January the 6th, I beg to differ, because we still have people that were just trespassing that are still sitting in jail, and people are calling them domestic terrorists.
Well, there you go.
And they have not hurt anybody. So I disagree. The man's a terrorist, a domestic one.
Well, that's a valid point. You know, and I saw somebody else tweeted out earlier. It might have been Jack Posobiec or somebody tweeted out that said that that literally this guy who committed the acts in, or appears to have committed the acts in Waukesha, Wisconsin, that he was out on bail for violent crimes, basically pretty low bail, and yet the January 6th folks have been held without bail for like over a year. And why is there equity in that? Some of those folks in the DC incident are going to wind up going to jail. I get it. All right. Maybe they broke down doors. Maybe they terrorized somebody. Maybe they threatened somebody. Maybe they committed some act of violence. A lot of them were just along for the ride, walking through and taking pictures and taking selfies and doing all the things. But then you got this guy, this Brooks guy up in Waukesha, who comes screaming through a parade, kills literally several senior citizens and a few other folks, and wounds almost 50, they're saying right now. And he was out on bail, a multiple violent offender. out on a very low bail. So low, by the way, I didn't even get to the article that I had on this. So low that the district attorney has launched an internal investigation to find out why the state prosecution in his cases allowed for a call for bail to be accepted at such a low level because of the level of offenses that he had on his record. Folks, it's awful. So we'll see where it goes. But Brian from Huntsville has a great point. How is it these folks on the January 6th thing are called domestic terrorists without even so much as having a trial, and they're locked away without chance of bail for a year, and you've got this guy who's out on like almost low-level, nothing bail, who is just killed five people and wounded close to 50 and destroyed lives in the process. All right, we're moving towards a short break. Copper, take us to the break. When we get back from that, folks, we will wrap up the day. Getting cooler out there tonight. Starting to feel like we got a real fall going on. Thanksgiving week. And oh, by the way, it's my anniversary. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative. Yep, just plain right. We'll be right back. News Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. Winding up the day here, let me tell you real quickly, though, about my friends at National Christian Foundation. National Christian Foundation, this is how Charlene and I handle our, sort of our streamlined process for handling our charitable giving. A lot of y'all, like us, you give to your church, you give to different charities, and you have monthly giving. Sometimes you have one-off giving, like a special campaign you're giving to or something like that. All said and done, you know, you do this, you have to write all the individual checks, right? And then at the end of the year, you get all the slips of paper back for your taxes. Or for that matter, maybe you're giving and you're also trying to sort of maximize your giving and make sure you're hitting the right level for charitable giving for your income, and you want it to go to good places but still have the benefit of the charitable deduction on your taxes. Listen, National Christian Foundation streamlines that entire process for us, and they can for you too. We give to one place, and they are a 501c, so the moment we give our money into National Christian Foundation, we get the tax write-off right then, no matter whether we're going to use it then or later. But then on top of that, they manage it like a portfolio. So they are literally helping grow it, they're fostering it, they're maximizing our ability to give, because what we gave them may actually expand while they have it in their possession, and then whenever we're ready, we just say, hey, okay, NCF, give it here, here, and here. They send the checks. And at the end of the year, I get one piece of paper for our taxes. Love that. And the Bradford family that runs it here in Alabama, they're wonderful, godly people, and they run this with wonderful, godly principles. So check them out. Here in Alabama, it's ncfgiving.com/Alabama. ncfgiving.com/Alabama. All right, so listen, going back to Rich called in a minute ago. Rich, if you're still listening, let me just go ahead and refresh a little bit on what we were talking about, because you brought up the jury question. And I have truthfully not been following the Ahmaud Arbery case as close as I did to the final days of the Rittenhouse trial. And I need to dive into that one probably by tomorrow, and I'll try and do that. And I think they were in closing arguments today, as a matter of fact. So Rich brought up the point of their jury, and I've not looked at the demographics of their jury. But let me just tell you this. When a jury is selected, both sides have a right to select the jurors. Actually, what they do is they weed out jurors. So what happens is, if you've never seen it before, some of y'all have served on a jury, and some of y'all are lawyers, and I hope I say this well. I am a lawyer. I do trial work. I have conducted numerous jury trials. And the jury selection process is unique. So what happens is, you got the huge jury pool, the venire, they call it, and everybody who comes in with a jury notice has to go, and they get put in the big pool. And they're waiting downstairs in the courtroom, you know, the courthouse. And then the judges will say, I need, you know, X number of jurors. And so they'll send up a pool of like 30. Well, they're only going to have 12. But they'll send up a pool of like 30, 40. Because what happens is, both sides get to ask questions. Hey, what is your background? Hey, what do you do for a living? Hey, do you have any problem with making a verdict if the jury finds evidence that presents to them that says yada, yada, yada? Do you have any problem Does anybody here know the defendant or the plaintiff or the prosecution or anybody in this case? Is anybody a member of their church? And you go through all these questions and you get to make sure you know your jury pool. And then I'm being overly simplistic here, but then what happens is at some point thereafter, you sit down and you have a quick deliberation. Like if you got somebody with you or just by yourself, you're going, okay, I don't want that one. 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 Okay. And then the judge calls everybody back in. And you go back and forth. In a criminal case, it's prosecution and defense. In a civil trial, it's plaintiff and defendant. You go back and forth. The plaintiff hereby strikes juror number 22. And you don't have to say why. It's called a peremptory strike. Without having to say why, you just chose not to keep someone on your jury. And you keep going through your strikes until you get a full jury. So at that point, you've struck from the X number who came in the door, let's say 36. There's 24 that are going to be struck. You're going to have 12 when you're done. And so the 24, you go back and forth. Each side, plaintiff and defense, gets to strike somebody. And you got to, there's a lot of brinksmanship in here. You got to have alternates on your strikes because the other side may strike one of yours and now you've got an extra one. So you're going down, 12. Well, what happens if you look at that jury pool and like Rich was complaining about a moment ago, they say, hey, this is a trial of a black man and that's an all-white jury. We don't think that's right. And we think that some of those strikes were purely based on race. Well, if you have some way of proving that a strike of a potential juror was based on either race or gender, then you can do what's called a Batson challenge. And it's related to a case called Batson. But anyway, you can do what's called a Batson challenge. You can challenge the makeup of the jury. And it can even result in a new trial, if necessary, later on, if for some reason it's appealed on that basis. It's hard to prevail on this, but the case comes from something called Batson v. Kentucky, which was a 1986 case. And it's unconstitutional to strike someone based on race. Now, I will say this. Rich is complaining about the jury in the Ahmaud Arbery case. Rich, if you're still listening, just understand again. Both sides got a say in selecting that jury. Both sides. And the defense has a right to challenge it based on race. I'm just saying. All right, folks, that was a full day. Listen, you have a great night. It is Thanksgiving week. I hope you're putting on a few pounds because you know what? That's fun. Anyway, have a great night. The great one, Mark Levin's coming up next. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. Copper and I'll be back here tomorrow at 2 o'clock. Have a great night.